Good afternoon, and it's time for you to ask the mayor. I'm Adam Ragusea. Mayor Mark Kruzan of Bloomington has floated his way in here through the flood and the rain this morning to have a chat with us and to answer any questions that might be on your mind or on my mind, as the case may be. Feel free to call in. 877-285-9348 is the toll-free number. 855-0811 is the local call in Bloomington. If you prefer, you can send an email to mayor@indiana.edu, or you can instant message me directly right here at screen name WFIU Mayor. Again, the phone number 877-285-9348. Local call 855-0811. The email is mayor@indiana.edu. Mr. Mayor, how are you feeling today?
Well, I've asked staff to build us an ark, and we're hoping for the best. It's been a long, long few days, and I think people can see literally what it's doing to the streets, and the system can only take so much. But still, people should feel free, especially when they see the potholes that will be forming and have already formed, to please give the city a call. And we're trying to get to those as much as fast as we can, and we will get to all of them. And I just want to, again, express appreciation to all the city staff. I just drove up Kirkwood earlier this morning, and you know, you see the guys out there as if it's not raining, the work that they're doing. So
Can they start patching holes now, or do they have to wait until a little bit after later in the season?
I already had started. Actually, I think I should have looked at the number right before I left, and I'll bet it's on my list here. But there's already been in the hundreds of – and I don't have that number. There's already been in the hundreds of potholes that have been repaired. They can't do the permanent fix until the weather settles out. But pothole repair has already begun, and I believe – and hopefully someone will text message me the – pothole number. There is a specific number in the phone book, even just under – literally listed under potholes. So give us a call.
Let's go ahead and chat about what the big news was over the weekend. And I'm not sure if so much it was news, but just in addition to the discourse, which was the Herald Times editorial board essentially pronouncing the downtown tech park all but defeated. And I'm sure you have some opinions you'd like to express on this, but we need to bring folks in on the ground floor of the issue because it is so important. Well, ultimately, what does a state tech park designation mean?
Well, the certified the tech park designation was made back in 2004. The process had started under the previous administration, continued under the current administration, and it takes a university to sign on and then to kind of co-host, I guess, as you will. Mm-hmm. And they're done different ways in different parts of the state. Sometimes they're entirely university encompassed. Sometimes they're with the municipality. It can be with a nonprofit. It can be a lot of different ways. Revenue is captured within the tech park, that the certification. It's only a designation. The park itself almost gives the impression that there's going to be the physical structure. It's really a designation of boundaries. And for us, the tech park is essentially the downtown area.
So it captures income tax to be reinvested,
into infrastructure within the park itself.
It's like a TIF district.
Exactly. And we've got the downtown Creed as well. And then you have TIF districts. So we had started the process with the designation being in that downtown area. And we've talked a little bit on this show before about the 12 acres that IU is going to be – I don't want to say abandoning. It's going to be moving out of in the downtown area. That makes up, I believe it's 18% of the total designations. And the university, of course, being the co-host of the tech park, is an essential player in the park itself. The park really never got off the ground in terms of any momentum other than a study and a plan for what the park could become. And in large part, it's simply things change. The university had a change of leadership that led to a shift of focus to a planned park out on 10th at the bypass. It's something that Michael McRobbie had talked about prior to becoming president, and certainly focused featured in his inaugural address. And since then, in talking with the state legislature of where they want to see investment. With that, it became clear to me, really, as early as 2005, I think, with the planning that was being done with the Certified Tech Advisory Board, which met many times and came up with a plan that I'm about the only way this could be worse would be had we invested money into that tech park. For instance, there was a suggestion, one of the very first things that people had suggested that we do was build a parking facility at 10th and Rogers, I believe, and to start to serve future tech park business, to start to build lab space and different things that could have been done. And I was extremely hesitant on moving forward with any kind of expenditure beyond the planning itself without knowing exactly where the university was, sensing that there might be a change when there was a change in administration, a change of interest and focus. And that's come to be. And I think that the 10th and the bypass plan is fine. And I believe this. It sounds a little trite, but I really believe what's good for IU is good for Bloomington. That doesn't mean it's good for downtown.
And I want to say that in a cornerstone of your downtown development plan that you talked about so much during the 2007 campaign was Certified Tech Park. It was BEAD, Certified Tech Park.
And Beeline. Right. Those three and the combination of the three was absolutely – and that's why I say the only way in my mind it could be worse in terms of what our plans were would be if we had invested heavily and then had these white elephants. So absolutely. To me, it was the blend of the three that would have been ideal. Without that, we are left with the development of the 12 acres that IU has. And again, I made no secret that I would have preferred the city own that property. But I'm also a realist, and we have no leverage to make that happen. We have no leverage to keep a tech park downtown. You're obviously not going to move forward on a tech park unless all the partners have completely bought in and are continue to be bought into the process. And I can't begrudge the fact that there's a different vision and the investment's going to go 10th and the bypass, and that still will be good for the community. Now we have to move on with what we can do with that downtown area. There's what is currently designated as a certified tech park. What I think ideally what would happen is that you can still have some kind of spin-off space that as businesses are incubated at the 10th and the bypass, that there might be some graduation space in that area. I don't know how realistic that is. I don't know if the university has a genuine interest there. There's been some talk of having two designations. I don't see that that's likely. So,
But I want to mention that I think geeks like me check out the Herald Times comment threads a lot, and there were so many posts from folks who work in downtown tech businesses like Councilman Whistler's business, Recite
sure.
Technologies, or saying that a big part of why they enjoy their jobs is the new urbanist aspect of it, the
Absolutely.
Fact that they get to live in such a vibrant area and it's so walkable. That said, so it indicates that there's a market incentive for companies to want to locate there. But with IU controlling 12 acres of that area and they can sell those plots off to whoever they want to sell them off to, is the university essentially in a position to hold the area hostage if what the city wants to do with the park is inconsistent with what IU's goals are for its 10th and the bypass facility?
I don't see it as being held hostage. I just simply see it as being they have a plan that's not the same as our plan and it's a change in administration. With that comes the right to shift focus, and I think it's a healthy focus. It's just not the ideal for the downtown area. And what you said is exactly what I had in mind. In terms of that downtown, the blend of a tech park and the kind of businesses, employers, and employees that come with that that kind of a sector of the economy, along with Beeline, because those companies, that is the space. I mean, that the Beeline goes right through the heart of what's been designated as the tech park. And in a perfect world, what my vision of this would have been was that we would have had those kind of companies located right along the trail in Bede, the Bloomington Entertainment and Arts District, and that people would want to have a live-work opportunity there, even if it's only work, that you're able to literally walk on a trail into the heart of downtown. And so that – with that blend gone – that kind of a blend, the opportunity for that kind of a blend gone. Now the question is, what do we do next? So we're working with the university on trying to establish what will be in that 12 acres. Again, the 12 acres itself is only a percentage, roughly 18-20% of the total park designation. So we still have an opportunity within that 12 acres to try to attract the kind of businesses that we hoped would be attracted there for the certified tech park. I don't give up hope on at all on small business, locally owned business locating in this part of the city.
Sure. And let's talk about that, because you mentioned that there hasn't been a significant public investment in the tech park idea as of yet, but there is on the verge of being some significant private investment by a gentleman by the name of Eric Deedy, a developer. Edie in Atlanta, who has this Morton North proposal, which as part of it and the city plan department fought for this vociferously. It was to have some office space as part of this this largely residential development for the Morton North property, and have it be blocked out at least for a period of a few years for tech or biotech or biomedical businesses. And I want to play just a couple of comments from Pat Williams from the Plan Commission meeting on Monday, where she was talking about this.
I think the timing of a lot of this information and newspaper coverage is rather unfortunate, that we're in a position we're holding the developer's feet to the fire on something that may never actually come to be.
If in fact the tech park really – if you really determine that there's no future for it, at least as you had initially hoped, do you think that the plan – department should look at potentially releasing the developer from those obligations earlier than is in the plans currently?
Yeah, it's not tech park specific. It's tech business specific, and I don't see a tech park designation, which is a state. I should have been clearer when I should have said that that's a state granted, and in February of 2009, I believe, is when the recertification would have to occur. So wherever it's going to be, the state has the final say in that, and we appreciate it. I mean, this is one – the Daniels administration, this was the last one under the Kernan administration and the first one that the Daniels administration allowed prior to slowing down on the entire approval process. So the state has worked with us very well, and we've appreciated that. The designation that was sought and agreed to with the developer in this case it goes to the second part of what I've been saying, and that is that we still, despite the fact there may not be – there won't be in my mind a tech park designation in the downtown, there still is the Creed. There still will be Beeline. There still will be the Entertainment Arts District, and I still see that you can still have that kind of a blend. Even if there's not that designation, what you won't have is the kind of recapturing of revenue under the designated tech park. That doesn't make it less attractive geographically, physically, with all the amenities. I think employees who are already there, who are you're talked about blogging or whatever it's called,
you kids today,
whatever it is they're all writing about exists today. It doesn't exist because of a tech park. It exists because the downtown is an amazing place to be, and that will continue to be. And my goal is to have Beeline Bede still make the downtown as attractive as possible as an employment center. So. That's the part I think that may have been misunderstood and by some plan commissioners is that this is not specific just to a tech park. It's to tech business, and we hope to still attract that kind of employer to the downtown.
Is there a mechanism by which the city or the city in conjunction with the county could still employ to capture tax revenue for the purposes of developing that?
And again, the Creed and the TIF and others already exist. I don't know of anything beyond that. I know that the state doesn't have any other kind of a designation that would be a tech-specific designation. and that that will very likely travel to 10th and the bypass. I mean, I don't see that there's much of an alternative there. So, I don't view this as being held hostage by the university. There's simply one from a political perspective at the local level. There's no leverage to make this happen. And if there were leverage to make it happen, I don't know why we would want to exercise it because you wouldn't have a willing partner in the project, and that's not the way you should move forward on something as important as this. So I think making the 10th and the Bypass project work as well as it can and moving forward on that 12 acres as to what that's going to be and the area around it. And there's an awful lot of other business people, other developments going on, business growth in that area. I think you've probably already reported the downtown is at its highest occupancy. Sure. And in my mind, what we need to be doing with all of the kind of development that occurs downtown is, one, to try to make it as small business friendly as possible. In addition, try to balance the demographic of new housing, that we not simply have all new housing be for student rental, but to have owner-occupied, to have senior housing, especially along the trail.
I want to go ahead and get back on that in just a second. Okay. I want to remind our listeners we're speaking with Bloomington Mayor Mark Kruzan here on WFIU's Ask the Mayor. And feel free to join the conversation, 877-285-9348. Local call is 855-0811. You can send an email to mayor@indiana.edu. You had the unveiling of the I should say that Maya Michelson with your blessing had the unveiling of the strategic plan for the Bloomington Entertainment and Arts District a couple of weeks ago. And first of all, let's just listen very quickly as to how Maya characterizes BEAD.
BEAD is very simple, really. It's three things. It's keep Bloomington Bloomington, get people here, and keep people here. Not too much more complex than that. Now, why we need 53 pages to tell you that, you'll have to read it and find out.
Now, I actually was one of the people who read those 53 pages.
It's in big type.
It's in big type. Yeah, I know. It's also oblong, which is the funny. I kept getting lost.
Like a bead.
Yeah. Hey, nice. But one of the interesting things is that looking to head those 10-year goals that are in there for 2018, one of them is to have some kind of major residential housing development in the downtown core that would be attractive to creative folks. And as a former creative folk myself, I can say that also means poor folks, generally speaking. And this feeds into something you've been talking about for a long time, which is how to diversify the social mix of the downtown residents from where we are now so that working people, families with children aren't effectively priced out of the downtown housing market. How do you do that? As with city government, what tools do you have at your disposal to incentivize a development like that? Or is it even feasible with downtown land costs being the way they are?
I think the second part of the question is almost answers the first, doesn't it? First of all, the 2018 is I think should be read as a wish list as opposed to a specific plan. I mean, that's something that it's a view or a vision of what could be. As opposed to the direct implementation parts, which are the initial almost all the plan. There are places there. I think Paducah, Kentucky gets cited a lot where they set out to purchase housing that then could be turned into live workspace and I'm not sure sold or leased or both or either at lower cost.
So it's a public housing initiative.
And it's essentially that's what has become. What I would like to see us try to do is to work with – and you know, you look at corridors like 4th Street, West Kirkwood, areas that at least in imagination lend themselves on the near west side to that kind of housing. And you know, then there's to me trade-offs. Then you, for what I dream of when I think of this kind of thing is the kind of a business where artists, you would be as part of the public be able to see that work in progress. Now I'm guessing there are some who would prefer that kind of privacy would not be invaded, and as you're doing your work, but that there be trade-offs back and forth. So again, that's something that the land cost clearly comes into play. Right now, what the city is doing, not at all related to BEAD or the arts at all, has been to buy up some older properties in that west side and turn them back over for private ownership and try to especially attract first-time home buyers. And then also very specifically affordable housing projects, working with CAP, working with Habitat and others and trying to establish some affordable housing. So there are already properties that the city buys up and then resells, and that's for the sake of affordable housing. I'd like to see maybe the same principle applied to trying to attract artists and try to create patrons of the art by doing so, that the public would see this, especially in a concentrated area, as an amenity itself, as well as a benefit to the artists.
Is a rent control program feasible for a city like Bloomington?
I don't know that rent control – and this has come up before, not in this aspect, but just in general. And I don't believe rent control – and I'll get flooded with emails and calls saying you're wrong. I don't know that rent control is legal in the state of Indiana. So that's something that we've looked at before, and I forget the specifics. But I think obviously this is something that it would have to be a subsidized project in some way. And you look at the Buskirk Chumley, which has been in the news lately with the renovations that are going to be taking place there. I mean, there are things that clearly you're not going to make a profit from, and nor is the intent to make a profit. It's viewed as being an investment in the quality of life in the community.
We've got a caller on the line. We've got John calling from Bloomington. John?
Yes, I think one thing that you can do in the downtown area as far as bringing affordable housing is when there are rental projects that receive tax abatement, typically they're supposed to allow 20% for affordable housing. And in the past, the city has not required that those units go to affordable causes.
In fact, there are a number of incentives in the UDO for offering affordable units in a project.
Right. And I think that's – and obviously there's not been much tax abatement for residential, but I think in future cases when that comes up that's clearly a requirement that can be considered. And we've looked at different trade-offs in terms of historic preservation, affordable housing, just revitalization, all those kind of considerations that can come up when you're talking about incentives. So I think that's a very valid comment.
Yeah, John forgot to turn off his radio there, so
okay.
we had to give him a cutoff. But let's go ahead and go to an email really quickly, and this should be an easy one. Barbara wants to know, will the city be running a West Side neighborhood cleanup this year? They did such a great job last year.
Well, I appreciate her saying that. And yes, the Department of Public Works and HAND have engaged in that in the past, and I believe the intent is to do that. And let me, if I can, this is maybe a way to shoehorn in some information on if you do see as part – and this isn't specific to that question – but if you have potholes to report, please call 349-3448. That number again, 349-3448. 48 to report pothole problems.
We've got some latecomers who want to chat with us on the phone, so let's go to Steve.
Hello.
Hi, Steve. What's your question?
I had a comment about affordable housing. The previous caller, John, kind of touched on this. And this is a new topic to me, so I don't know a lot about it, about rent control and that kind of thing. But I've read about something called inclusionary zoning, which would require developers to, in their residential developments, make 10 or 20% of the units affordable. And the reason I'm interested in this, it's also linked to transportation reform. You know, in the heyday of suburbia, it was always possible just to drive until you qualify, you know, just live further from the city and find a cheaper house. And but with gasoline prices skyrocketing, I think that's going to end up, you know, making it unaffordable.
TOD, transit-oriented development, is I think what you're referring to.
Yes,
there.
Yes.
Well, that's a great comment, and I think that's something that we could talk about. We're going to go ahead and let you go, Steve, for the time being, because
okay.
We want to move on to Stan, so we can be sure to get him in. Stan, hi. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you. The other day, there was a brief editorial in the paper about the upcoming expenses for renovations at the Buskirk Chumley.
Yes, sir.
And it got me thinking about programs, I should say, permission under the law in some areas of governance for private contributions to be made, which could be, in some cases, on a tax-deductible basis. We've had a recent example, I believe. But I just wondered if the city could ask the state legislature for such permission. And I'm thinking in terms of affordable housing and Buskirk Chumley and other areas of culture. But in general, I think those of us who were fortunate, and especially those of us who are getting back stimulus payments, could consider that.
I really appreciate that. I there have been obviously the Buskirk Chumley itself. The name comes from some benefactors who have made those kind of contributions. But and you know, there's been, and I want to pursue that kind of a concept for almost endowments. I think could, and we've seen that interest in specific areas of the city, parks and recreation, even the animal shelter. There are people who have earmarked their kind of contributions. And in terms of finding out all what is tax deductible and not, I'd need to find out how that works in terms of the municipality. I think that's a great idea.
But I think it would help. It would help people feel that they're part of the
absolutely
of the community.
Very good point.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And enjoy that. What'd you call it? Stimulus.
The stimulus check.
Stimulus payment.
The stimulus
from the federal
payment.
Government,
right, exactly.
For those who made at least $3,000
right.
in 2007. Those who filed income tax returns will automatically get it, and those who have not are encouraged to file. There's lots of support, both in the private sector and by the federal government, in providing assistance for people who don't know how to do it themselves. It's very simple.
Good advice.
Thanks for the call,
I want
Stan.
You to come in, Stan, and do this show.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Okay, we've had to let Stan go. Just apropos of the Buskirk Chumley Theater, Mr. Mayor, you have said that you would prefer if the city were not in the theater business, as it were. Do you see that private support like the support that Stan seems eager to provide could eventually remove the city component of support for Buskirk Chumley in the future?
I think unlikely. I think if there was money to be made there, we would have already seen someone come forward and do it. I think it is a very valid expenditure of public revenue, and the facility, the Buskirk Chumley Theater Management Incorporated, to me, it is a very valid and valuable public service that's offered. But I don't see that. I don't see the theater becoming privately owned. Not impossible, but I don't see it as likely.
And just in our final 90 seconds here, I want to talk about a couple of big water projects going to be undertaken by the city. And one is that you got an alternative estimate back for the proposal of the redundant water main, and it looks like the price was nearly right on the mark, the one that was quoted to you by Black and Veatch. But it's still a lot of money. Was it $20 million in the neighborhood of?
Yes, it depends on which part of the program, but it absolutely came within range. And you know, there were those who felt that a second opinion was necessary, and now we've got it. And it absolutely both costs were within range. So it's an expensive program. It's necessary, and I think now we can have a lot more confidence that the numbers we got in the first place were accurate.
What do you see as the timeline being on this at this point, or does that lie with the utility service board?
That absolutely lies with the board. I've already made my recommendation, gosh, I don't know how many months ago now, and a second opinion was sought and received and now been reported. So it's up to the board to act. I can say that the longer the board waits to act on it, the more expensive the project becomes, and so the sooner the better.
Well, that's about all the time we have today. Thank you so much for coming in, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you all.
This has been Ask the Mayor with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan. I'm Adam Ragusea. Join us again next Wednesday. Kokomo Mayor Greg Goodnight will be our guest. For producer Colin Bishop and engineer Mike Paskash, thanks for listening. And production support for Ask the Mayor comes from the South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lappin Real Estate.